This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
And, you know, the goal is, you know, it's to first recognize that it's a problem and then decide to do something about it.
So many of us try to be responsible, eco-conscious consumers. We walk or bike to our local food co-op or natural food store, our reusable canvas shopping bags in tow. But try buying organic or green products that don't come in petroleum-based plastic packaging, and you'll soon be presented with another slew of challenges. Those of us who've been frustrated by this reality will be happy to learn that there are some people and companies working to reduce the use of plastic packaging in the food industry. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with the founder of a zero-waste grocery store coming soon to Austin, Texas, a nut butter entrepreneur who hosted an industry-wide summit to come up with compostable squeeze packs, and a snack chip executive whose company has introduced a greener bag for its products. My first guest on Sea Change Radio is Christian Lane. He's the founder of Ingredients. It's a zero-waste grocery store coming to Austin, Texas later this fall. Christian, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about the idea behind Ingredients.
Sure. The basic premise is that we're a package-free and zero-waste micro-grocer. So what that means is that we're prioritizing limitation on packaging so that consumers can essentially bring their containers and purchase the ingredients, the products that they're looking for, without all the packaging. We're putting zero waste at the core of our business operations, which means that we're striving to produce as little waste as possible as a business, and in a sense facilitating the ability for consumers to achieve a zero waste lifestyle. Zero waste, it's pretty close to impossible to achieve absolute zero, but zero waste is this quest to reduce and eliminate the products and the waste streams from going to incinerators and landfills.
What are some of the challenges in terms of which products you carry when creating a zero-waste grocery store like Ingredients?
The bigger challenges are some of the more perishable type, less chef-stable products. You can think of, meat and some of the dairy type things. What we want to do is help get us back to older ways. So there's different models for distributing, say, dairy products that limit the amount of packaging that's required. Older models include, bottles on deposit. So you bring in your empties and you take away full bottles. So we're working on those kinds of things there. Other kinds of dairy areas may require more counter-type service so that they're in a cool, stable environment and dispensed with assistance to the customer that brings a container. And again, in the event that a consumer doesn't bring a container, though, there will be options available to them, compostable options that are more responsible than some of the other packages we're used to. Other areas of kind of a challenge are some of the proteins, like the meats. However, we can reduce the packaging required in proteins. A lot of the local farmers and ranchers in the area, when they slaughter an animal, they immediately cryo-freeze or cryovac freeze the products. There is some plastic around that. But of all things that really have a strong use case for, some packaging, is some of those products where, there's a higher order species, such as a cow or a bull or whatever, that, sacrificed its life for the, benefit of human beings consuming it. So those are some of the things that we will be freezing, and we'll have, some limited packaging for those products. And some of these things also, if we were a full butcher, we could do a lot of things better in terms of limiting packaging. But I think over time, and it kind of gets into other areas of a conversation on packaging, modern groceries want to have everything and anything and everything for the consumer, which means that they've kind of removed those they've taken away the bakery and they've taken away the butcher and all those kinds of things, class them into one big business.
And where do you think the most progress has been made in terms of from the panoply of products that are that will be stocked on ingredients shelf? Where do you think the most progress has been made in terms of categories, food categories?
We're not going to be carrying a lot of the overprocessed food that you find in a grocery store that requires or has a lot of the preservatives, or that requires all the packaging because of, you know, just the nature of the product itself. We're going to offer all the basic core ingredients that you need to make all those things, right? We're trying to help customers get back to a simpler way of doing things, and instead of spending money on the perceived value add of, you know, whatever the machine is making, you know, getting them to those basic things so they can make those things themselves and eat healthier that way. You know, there's a substantial number of people that are really about slow food, right? And they want the distance, and we're helping facilitate this. They want the distance between their biological system, them and their family, and the biological system that is the food itself, whether it's the potato or whether it's the beef. They want to shorten that distance and remove a lot of the machinery and heavy equipment and transportation and all those elements out of the equation, right? So, you know, there are products that are ready-made, you know, like crackers and like cookies and those kinds of things that, you know, today you can get in bulk. They're already available, right? So what we're doing is just integrating a whole different set of, I guess, ideals, if you will, into one offering. And part of the thing is, too, is that, you know, if we do go get a bunch of tortilla chips from our local manufacturers, we can dispense those in bulk. You know, we can dispense those in a bin with a scoop or whatever the case is. You know, there are solutions around these things. We've been working with a lot of the local vendors, you know, whether they're coffee roasters or whether they're, you know, just, you know, people that produce granola or different even raw foods. They're all about dispensing or actually delivering in a sealed container that's reusable so that we can take in the full container and give them back their empty and stock the, you know, our bins with their product. Keep things fresh, but at the same time, you know, not waste packaging from their stuff coming into our store or packaging from our store going to the consumer's home. Now, there are products that we're going to have to source from more national sources or bigger sources, but as much as possible, we're trying to keep things to Austin or Travis County or Williamson County, some surrounding counties, extend that footprint to Texas where necessary, and then, you know, extend out to nationally. Now, there are some vendors or producers that are national where it's just not going to make sense for them to ever deliver us a container that we can send back to them. You know, it's not going to make sense to send back an empty container some long, long distance. But with local vendors, you know, they're delivering those things themselves personally while they're making their rounds, delivering to other people. However, also, you know, with those national vendors, the form factor of the stuff they're shipping into, we're going to take that and, you know, worst case, recycle it. But best case, upcycle it, find an alternative use for those kinds of things. You know, make sure that we are reducing and reusing what we're bringing into the business, because the business itself is, you know, very much based on zero waste.
Christian, you mentioned that your store is going to be doing both pre-cycling and recycling. So what does pre-cycling mean?
Right. So pre-cycling is really prioritizing reduce and reuse and preventing the opportunity from waste from entering into the home or business in the first place. It's getting ahead of the need to be, you know, creating anything over and over and over again for you know, single-use waste or even recycling. And it's, like I said, prioritizing reduce and reuse, and at times even refusing things.
Christian Lane, good luck with your store Ingredients, which opens up later this fall in Austin, Texas. Thanks for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
We'll be right back. Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
I next spoke to the founder and CEO of Justin's Nut Butter, Justin Gold. In the fall of 2010, Justin's company put together a summit for other like-minded companies who are concerned about the lack of a compost solution for squeeze packs. Justin, first, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, Alex.
Now, can you tell us what was the inspiration behind putting together this composting summit?
You know, I got into this business because I'm a vegetarian, I'm an avid outdoorsman, and I was eating so much peanut butter and almond butter for protein while I was mountain biking and hiking and trail running that I decided that it'd be really awesome to have peanut butter and almond butter in little squeeze packs so I can have instant energy or protein while I'm out on the trail. And so that way, instead of having a high-energy carbohydrate gel, I could have protein. And, you know, one of the unintended consequences of having a squeeze pack is that you have this organic product in wasteful packaging. And, you know, sometimes wasteful packaging slips out of your backpack and ends up on the trail, and it sits there for thousands of years. Or, you know, even worse, it ends up in a landfill.
And while gel packs are a fairly new innovation in terms of what goes into these squeeze packs, I think of the ubiquitous Heinz ketchup and mustard squeeze packs littered in front of a fast food joint or just about everywhere.
Yeah, that's correct. And yes, the squeeze packs, you get them at Taco Bell, you know, virtually every drive-through center, you know, you can think of. And it creates a lot of litter. And not only does it create, you know, wasteful trash, but most people don't realize that the packaging of that squeeze pack comes from petroleum. So it's basically PET, and a lot of the packaging comes from, you know, a non-renewable resource and then ends up again back in a landfill. And I was really frustrated that, you know, there's all this new technology that's being developed around chips, you know, or I'm sorry, packaging for chips, like what SunChips is doing, or even packaging for bottling, but no one's coming up with any sustainable solutions for squeeze packs. So what we did is on October 6th and 7th of 2010, we hosted the world's first sustainable squeeze pack summit. And what we did is we decided to really narrowly focus on exactly what we wanted, which was just, you know, finding more sustainable solutions to squeeze packs. It wasn't trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel for recycling and compostability across spoons and cutlery. It was really just focusing and hammering on squeeze packs. We invited all the leaders of the squeeze pack category and in the food industry to participate. We also invited some of the resin suppliers and also some of the converters who actually make the film. And, you know, we had a really great turnout. We of course, invited Heinz, but they elected not to come. But we did get Nestle there, and they own Power Bar. General Mills was there. Goo was there. We also had folks from Whole Foods and also from Walmart. And so we also invited Cargill. And Cargill is one of the largest corn suppliers in the world. And they have the technology of making, you know, a corn resin, which is also called PCR, which behaves exactly like plastic. And so, you know, our goal for the summit was to first identify, you know, what is the state of the industry? Is anybody working on anything that's sustainable or compostable, you know, for film packaging, flexible film packaging? And we came to find out that there really isn't a whole lot of work being done. You know, there's a lot of work being done in other avenues, maybe for cutlery and for plates and for, you know, chips or for bags that hold chips, but nothing for squeeze packs that could hold peanut butter or ketchup or picante sauce. So we invited everybody to kind of help us solve this problem. And what was really fascinating is, you know, because of the state of the industry right now, there really is no smoking bullet. No, I'm sorry, there really is no smoking gun. There's nothing out there right now that can fix everything, a silver bullet, so to speak. And so we decided that it's best to just start with baby steps and first to define what our vision is. And our vision is to have, you know, of course, 100% renewably sourced squeeze pack film that's also 100% compostable. And as a group, we decided that since most Americans, as you already demonstrated, aren't recycling to begin with, that, you know, even having a compostable film structure will not do, you know, the community much good because they won't have compostable facilities available, or they won't be composting it personally at home. So we decided to focus on the front end of the conversation instead of the back end of the conversation, you know, so that way we can solve this problem in pieces. So for today, how can we source more of the film that goes into these squeeze packs to come from renewably sourced resources instead of petroleum? And what we've found is that you can really blow plastic out of any type of a starch or sugar. And corn, switchgrass, algae, you name it. There's a lot of different sources you can use to make plastic. And as it turns out, in the United States right now, corn is the cheapest source of sugar that's being used to make plastic. So a lot of the conversation was about using corn. And then unfortunately, you know, the vast amounts of corn that are grown in the United States is genetically modified. So now the whole conversation shifts. Well, you know, what's the cost benefit, you know, advantage analysis of using a GMO corn versus petroleum? And we really had some great conversations and some great debates. And we basically decided that, you know, weaning ourselves off of petroleum, no matter, you know, with any type of renewable resource, is better than what we're currently doing. And so our goal was for Earth Day 2011 to start implementing some of these renewably sourced films into our current film structure.
I can imagine that a smaller company like Justin's Nut Butter could also benefit from having these big players into the conversation in terms of lowering everybody's cost.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, one of the other objectives of inviting all of these, you know, some competitors even to the room, was to basically show that these film converters and resin suppliers that we are all interested in finding a solution to this problem. And hopefully, if we do find a solution, we can all stand behind it and then drive down the cost for everybody, you know. And if we were to get someone like Heinz involved, it would be a game changer. But hopefully there's enough small companies that are interested that we can push innovation for this type of technology and then ultimately drive down the cost.
And just to give our listeners an idea of the squeeze pack problem, in an average person's lifetime, 2.6 trillion of these squeeze packs will accumulate in a landfill and stay there for thousands of years. But how long will these newly designed squeeze packs stay in a landfill, Justin?
Well, so here's the challenge. A landfill is basically an environment that allows for anaerobic, you know, decomposition. So it doesn't matter. So you can have a fully compostable product put into a landfill, but if it doesn't have oxygen, it's still not going to compost. So landfills are really great at storing things or preserving things in the way they are. And some things break down in anaerobic environments and some things don't. And compostable products generally don't, unless you add something to it. So again, you know, our goal for today or for this year isn't to solve the whole problem all at once. It's to use less fossil fuels to make the film structure that's in our squeeze pack by using more renewably sourced fuels like corn and eucalyptus, and then in the future be able to, you know, use things that are also compostable.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is the founder of Justin's Nut Butter, Justin Gold. Justin, you mentioned that Heinz wasn't able to participate in the first summit, and for the 33 billion single-serve packs that are thrown into landfills each year, around one-third of those come from Heinz. But has there been some progress in engaging Heinz to the in bringing them to the table?
There's been a little progress. We have found out who heads their sustainability efforts, and we've been in contact with them. And but, you know, other companies like Frito-Lay were, you know, have responded and reached out to us. And then we just read recently that Heinz has committed to using 33% renewably sourced plastic for their squeeze bottle ketchup containers. So, you know, I don't know if Heinz has been working on this or if, you know, we lit a fire under their butts, but I'm at least very happy that they're starting to move and shift towards sustainability, which means that they're ultimately their ketchup squeeze packs would be their next hurdle. And hopefully they can come join us or we can join them and solve this problem together.
So this new packaging that's 30% compostable is for their squeeze bottles, but not their squeeze packs. Is that right?
That is correct, but it's not compostable. It's 33% of that plastic is sourced from a renewable source.
I see. So it's a baby step, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, and that's the whole point, because we can't solve this problem in just one step. And, you know, the goal is, you know, it's to first recognize that it's a problem and then decide to do something about it.
So my guest on Sea Change Radio has been the founder and CEO of Justin's Nut Butter, Justin Gold. Justin, thanks so much for being on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Good luck.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is the Senior Vice President of Marketing at Adventure Foods, which makes Boulder Canyon Foods, Steve Sklar. Steve, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Tell us a little bit about the Boulder Canyon food line and some of the challenges you've encountered in trying to make your packaging as eco-friendly as possible.
Sure. Well, Boulder Canyon, which was started in Colorado, is an all-natural kettle chip brand of products. And, you know, when we look at what's going on in the environment, we've always tried to figure out how we can help improve what we're doing to not create additional waste and byproducts. And some of the things we've been able to do are to use renewable energy credits. We also support the American rivers. But then we really kind of put some effort into how can we use some compostable packaging to reduce the footprint that we're making on the environment. And we worked with, you know, closely with our packaging companies to develop a product that not only is compostable, but also looks, feels, and sounds just like our existing packaging, so people wouldn't really sense a difference in the package and the product that they were getting. And we wanted to ensure the confidence in our consumers and our customers that, you know, the product inside is just as good with a compostable package and without a compostable package.
Refresh our listeners about the issue with Sun Chips, did that come into play at all in the development of your bag?
Well, Sun Chips made a big splash with their product, and it immediately got a lot of negative press because it was so loud. And when we were developing our product, we really wanted to make sure we had a very similar feel on our package. And it did play an important part, because when we saw what they were doing, we wanted to just make sure that didn't happen to our brand, because this was a big step for us, and we wanted to ensure that we didn't have an issue that Sun Chips had.
And what's the difference in terms of the materials that you and Sun Chips use?
Right. What we're using is a wood pulp source of compostable packaging, and they were using a corn or a sugar base, so it was actually using up some of the food supply, and just the way they configured it, it made that very loud sound. So part of our whole brand position is our bag is in a matte finish, almost a paper bag, and we really wanted to make sure that we maintain that integrity of the product, because that's what the brand really stands for, is that all natural look and feel.
It's a little unfortunate that a big player like this had to remove their compostable packaging because of excessive noise from a bag, which usually is a fairly noisy thing anyway. Do you think that your bag that you've developed or something similar could be adopted by some of the behemoths in the industry?
They could. I believe that anybody can go out and take this technology and bring it into their packaging. I just think that a lot of brands it's not as meaningful for their consumers. And for our consumers, it really ties into what the brand stands for and what our, you know, business has always stood for with, you know, in the natural channel of business where we're delivering products at 100% all natural.
Unfortunately, it's depending on your branding. And if you're trying to be a greener, quote unquote, greener brand, as opposed to something that's a mass market product like Frito-Lay is presenting, they don't really take a lot of stock in trying to reach those environmentally aware consumers, you're saying.
Yeah, I believe with SunChips, it's much more of a marketing play. With us, it's much more connecting to what our brand stands for and what we can, you know, deliver to our customers.
So what are the main technological innovations occurring in the snack chip bag world these days?
Sure. I mean, they're really, when you look at a bag or a package for a snack chip, there are typically a number of layers of product which go into that material to create a barrier so air doesn't get into the bag, because once you get air into a bag, it starts to oxidize the oils in the product, and that's where a product can go rancid over time. So the key thing is having that barrier to keep the, you know, the freshness inside the bag. So with the compostable packaging, there is a different layer that goes into that product that is that barrier film, but it also will decompose or over time. And that's really the key, is having the balance of having a barrier to keep the product fresh, but also that product will break down over time in the right environment. So that was the big effort for us, is getting that product to maintain the freshness, but also degrade in the right composting situation over a short amount of time.
Can you walk us through a little bit of the differences in the price that goes into the compostable packaging versus the traditional non-compostable packaging, Steve?
So there are definitely some incremental costs in getting to a compostable product, and it costs probably, you know, somewhere in the 4-5% range to get there. And that's something that, you know, it's the cost of doing business at a lower volume. And our hope is that as this product catches on and grows, that we'll be able to scale this up to a larger part of our business, because we're just testing it now. And as we get that scale, the cost will drop, and therefore it won't be a big expense to burden retailers and consumers with. But today, because we are leading and it's cutting edge technology, it is expensive. And until that scale gets there, it is going to be expensive.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is the Senior Vice President of Marketing at Adventure Foods, Steve Sklar. His company makes Boulder Canyon Foods. Tell us what kind of decisions a company like yours has to make in terms of sourcing its ingredients.
When we look at our potato chip business, our goal is to, you know, be gluten-free. We use non-GMO potatoes, and our goal is to continue to expand into, you know, non-GMO seasonings and make sure that everything we're doing fits into that kind of all-natural, better-for-you category of products. And some ingredients and components are very difficult to find non-GMO, but that's part of our challenge, is to, you know, source other parts of the world where we can find products that fit that need.
Steve Sklar, the Senior Vice President of Marketing at Adventure Foods, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by The Bar Kays, Sam and Dave, and Freddie King. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Sungevity Home Solar Specialists. Go to Sungevity.com to learn more. Check out our website at SeaChangeRadio.com. That's SEAChangeRadio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.